You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Dr. Dwayne Varon.
I think that a lot of the assumptions that we make are flawed assumptions. So, for example, a lot of advertisers pulled back their budget and they assumed that, you know, advertising during the pandemic was a bad thing, and that there would be this negative kind of like spillover in terms of their brands if they advertised. In fact, I think it was the opposite. The advertising really provided a little bit of a relief, and there were very positive effects associated. We know this from a lot of the work that we did. So the brands that held back during the pandemic, I think, made a colossal mistake.
Dwayne is CEO of both Media Science and Heart Connect. He is the recipient of numerous awards, including the Australian Prime Minister's Award for University Teacher of the Year, and is a global pioneer in developing new methodologies for the study of audience behavior. Media Science is a leader in lab-based audience research, counting almost every major U.S. television network, social media platform, and many global brands as clients. Heart Connect is the world's most advanced qualitative research platform. Although Dr. Varon is now based in industry, he continues to contribute to academic journals. In fact, in four of the past 6 years, his work was voted as Best Paper of the Year or runner-up for Best Paper of the Year by the Journal of Advertising Research. Dwayne, welcome to On Brand.
It's great to be here. It's great to be here. Thanks, Nick.
Well, I am so excited to chat with you, and specifically about your work in qualitative research, because I think that a lot of times as marketers, we may be in our quest for research are quick to jump to the quantitative side of things. And I'm wondering if it's because the qualitative is, for lack of a better word or excuse, hard and scary.
Well, you know, they both go hand in hand.
At being hard, you know, and scary?
What qualitative does is it gives us space to explore much more. You know, quantitative by definition is very narrow in its focus. I mean, it's the point. The point of it is to kind of like have very specific things that you're looking to kind of like test or validate. Where with qualitative, we're trying to understand and explore better. So we're trying to understand the systems of meaning in terms of how people construct meaning around whatever it is. So we have broader latitude to kind of like go places that we might not necessarily go. It's the respondent or the consumer who's kind of like doing the driving, and we're trying to understand them better in terms of where they're taking us.
So in terms of that mission of understanding the audience better, does that start with a question? Does that start with a brand? Where is the best starting point for the work of qualitative research?
Well, you know, qualitative research can contribute at the front end, and it can also contribute at the tail end. It can also kind of like be at the bookends, if you will. You know, you can start with qualitative research to kind of like explore and understand what your quant research should be focused on. You can do quantitative research, and then you can try to, you might discover a number of insights, and then you can turn to qualitative to kind of give you color around what you found. So there's no one hard rule about where it goes. I think it's valuable kind of like throughout the process. You know, wherever we are, when we need to kind of like explore with a broader, you know, casting a broader net, it's always going to be useful in terms of giving us a lot of those insights.
So this is probably a loaded question, but knowing that we have latitude with qualitative research, what has are there any broad strokes in terms of where the consumer's mindset has been over this past year and a half of pandemic?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's an understatement to say it's a very unique time. I mean, whatever your life experience is, your life experience in the past, 2 years has been different to whatever it was. And it doesn't matter what it is you do in every way. Life as we know it has changed. And there's no question that, that has implications for everything. So, I think that a lot of the assumptions that we make are flawed assumptions. So, for example, a lot of advertisers pulled back their budget and they assumed that, advertising during the pandemic was a bad thing, and that there would be this negative kind of like spillover in terms of their brands if they advertised. In fact, I think it was the opposite. The advertising really provided a little bit of a relief, and there were very positive effects associated. We know this from a lot of the work that we did. So the brands that held back during the pandemic, I think, made a colossal mistake. It was not a time to pull back. It was actually a time to invest, in your brand. So the assumptions that people have made are not necessarily correct assumptions. And that's really the role of research, is to test those assumptions to help guide us through periods like that.
As you walked us through that and you said something, it occurred to me that I'm guessing in your line of work, you find yourself saying, a lot of our assumptions are bad assumptions.
It's absolutely right. I mean, that's absolutely right. I can't tell you the number of times we have tested something that has been known since the dawn of time and tested it and found out that actually it was a flawed assumption. So you can't just kind of like go on gut feel, or you can't go on convention. And especially in the world we live in today, the world we live in today is full of disruption. And things are changing all around us. So it's all the more reason why we shouldn't just rest on assumptions or on conventions. Things have to be tested.
To that end, talk a bit about Heart Connect's platform, because I think that qualitative research is something that, I mean, I think beyond my earlier excuses of it's hard and scary, I'm not sure it's real well understood how we can get at this in a meaningful way. So what has made your approach one of the more advanced ones out there?
Yeah, Heart Connect has been a joy. The background to how Heart Connect came to be is that, especially our TV clients, what we do at Media Science is very advanced kind of levels of audience research with sensors connected on people, to people's fingers, where we look at their galvanic skin response and their heart rate data, and we track their eye movement. And we do these studies. So, for example, we do a lot of pilot study tests where we test a TV show. And the way that we do it, we might have 70 people in these cubicles in our labs who were doing this kind of testing and looking at how their body is reacting, to the content that they're exposed to. The reason that's so critical is because it gives us a direct measure of emotion. So rather than being dependent on what people tell us, we can kind of like measure that emotion directly. And a lot of our TV clients, of course, loved it, but they said, hey, Dwayne, could we get a few of these people afterwards and do a focus group with them? And we're like, sure. And so we began, facilitating our clients' requests to do these focus groups after these big pilot tests that we would do. And when we did it, the clients were using software that was available in the industry. And we looked at the software and we're like, oh my God, this is so primitive. like this is terrible. Like, we can give you better than this. And the client said, really? And we go, yeah, we'll whip something up. And so we just created our own in-house version of the software. And they're like, holy cow, this is just so much more advanced than anything we've used. And they said, you really should take this to market. So it was really at the behest of our TV network clients in particular that we took what was Heart Connect in its early form, and we decided to bring it to market. We spent about 3 years doing research on it, talking to all the different kind of like core constituents, you know, clients, moderators, researchers, respondents. We sat down and looked at everybody's needs, and that's how we created this platform from scratch. And what's so different about it is a lot of these other platforms are just a layer built on top of, you know, another video platform. Like most of these were built on Adobe Connect, which now is defunct. And so those platforms really struggle because they're no longer really relevant in a way. So we created it from scratch. And what that meant was that we could do things that you just could never have done before. In fact, we have a lot of AI that's gone into Heart Connect. So there's live transcription, live translation into more than 60 languages. You know, you have that all appear as a closed caption. You can change the languages as you're watching the session. But also you can tag, and also the AI, we call her Ava. Ava is tagging as well. You may have given Ava some keywords. She's looking for those words, and when she sees them, she tags them. So a flag pops up that tells you, you know, that your competitor was referenced. There's sentiment analysis happening. So Ava's weighing up whether what the respondents are saying is fundamentally positive or negative and tagging it that way as well. And then at the end of your session, once all that content is tagged, you can extract it. And what's great about that is it's near instant. And so you say, tell me every time the competitor was mentioned, and it automatically extracts those clips for you. And the reason that's such a big deal is because one of the challenges with qual research is it takes about 6 hours to kind of like get to every 1 hour of a session in terms of extracting those insights. And this does it near instantly for you. So it greatly accelerates the speed and the pace. And so these are examples, but what Heart Connect is doing is it's kind of like creating a virtual assistant who's sitting there with you using a lot of these AI technologies, who's sitting there with you and helping make the process a lot better, a lot faster.
That's fascinating. And I think that approach and making that so much more accessible and especially with the AI and virtual components baked in too is pretty powerful. Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the 7 dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show. In thinking about our work as brand builders, it occurs to me that advice that people like me give a lot when I'm talking on the subject of building a better brand, one of the most important building blocks is understanding your people, your audience better. So if someone hears me say that, and then they come to you and say, someone at an event like Nick just said, know your people better. How do you unpack that with them?
Well, you know, it's always important to understand our objectives. The one thing that you need to do going in is you have to be clear what it is you're really looking for. You have to really know where it is you're trying to probe, what you're trying to discover ultimately. And you know, it's a part of the process that's marketing 101, but that I think we lose sight of all the time. You know, sure, we have a sales objective. That's too big. You know, we have to translate that into communication objectives. And what are our communication objectives, and how do we know what success looks like? We've lived too long as an industry kind of trying to fit our marketing problem to the measures that kind of exist in the market, like ratings, for example. You know, we have common currencies like ratings in the market, and we try to figure out how to use that to kind of like in some way fit our problem more, or standard surveys or whatever. But what we need to do increasingly is we need to say, well, what are our communication objectives and what are the best in class measures to get us to whether, you know, whether we're seeing success? And ultimately, you know, I think that's what it all comes down to. We may have the right strategy, we may not, but if we can't measure for our communication objectives to see whether we're delivering on those communication objectives, we won't know if our strategy is right in the first place. So it's really critical to, I think, getting the equation right.
Well, this kind of bookends just in the same way that you said the data itself bookends the importance, because I think, as we talk about exploring this on the front end with objective-based, that measurement on the other side to know if our work has been successful. Are there regular checkpoints that brands should be considering for ongoing impact when it comes to qualitative research?
Well, yeah. So again, I think that the mission that I'm talking about there about measuring against those objectives, that's primarily a quant task. That's not the qual task. The qual task is really going to what those objectives should be in the first place. It goes to listening to the consumer and listening to the changes that the consumer is going through. Again, it's about discovering the system of meaning in the mind of the consumer and how that relates ultimately to our brand. I mean, at the end of the day, branding is real estate of the mind, and we need to understand that real estate in the context of the respondent, of the consumer's worldview, not the other way around. It's not that we have a worldview that we're imposing on the consumer. It's that we're trying to understand the worldview of the consumer and see how we align what we do as marketeers ultimately to that worldview.
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question, as it were, in terms of how we align with our customer's worldview. And, you know, picking apart those big questions like meaning, too. I think that's something else that we know, we've heard over and over again, that the brands that stand out are the brands that stand for something. And I think that's easy to nod along with, but it's much harder to put into practice of knowing what means something to my people. That's a big question to get at, and not one that's always in the numbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, in the qual domain, I think we operate on three levels. We operate at the level of text, context, and subtext. Text is what people say. And so we're engaging in a conversation with them and we're listening to what they say. And in a lot of ways, that's a little bit more similar to what we're doing with, with our quant research. It's just the quant research is focused. Like it's kind of like the hard end now of where we've gone on our journey in terms of articulating specific questions that we're trying to answer. Here we have a more open-ended process, but it's still engaging in a dialogue, listening to the text in terms of what people say. Then we're looking for the context. You know, what are the different circumstances? What are the different situations? You know, we're getting at that system of meaning a little bit deeper now, not just what they say, but the situations, the contexts, you know, the kind of factors that moderate and influence it. You know, we're getting there. And then we're getting at the subtext. What are they not telling us? You know, what can we read into what they're saying? You know, so that's really, I think, the art of what good qual research is all about. Not just engaging in a conversation at the level of text, but really being able to transcend text and get to deeper levels of insights around, the kinds of things that people are telling us. And again, it's where I think, Heart Connect makes its contributions, you know, particularly in giving us tools that start taking us better into the context and subtext of the situation.
So if someone is out there listening to this and has this qualitative research light bulb has gone off, this door is open for them, and what's beyond it looks vast, what's the one first step that you would advise people to consider if they're doing nothing by way of qualitative research today to take that first step?
Well, I think that, you know, there is a stigma often around qual research. You know, people think numbers are more impressive. They certainly feel more scientific, you know. So I think that people sometimes look at qual research and think, oh, well, that's not as serious or whatever. And it's a mistake. You know, they make different contributions for sure. But I think the best way to get over the hump is to do it, is to just try it. It's not expensive. You know, quant research can be very expensive. Qual research, you know, it doesn't cost a lot to have a stab. Certainly, you know, picking the right moderator, picking the right team, those are all really important parts of the process. But I think it's worth giving a stab to it, because nothing will acquaint a person to its potential more than actually trying it and seeing all the great kinds of insights that grow out of that research. I think it's very liberating for people once they start doing it and start seeing the kinds of benefits that they get out of it. And like I say, because it doesn't cost a lot, there's not really a lot of harm in giving it a go, so to speak.
And just as you we talked a lot about quantitative research, what do you think is the... I stop myself from saying the right balance, but theoretically, these data sets are going to overlap, are going to work together. What does that relationship look like, or should it?
Well, and there's a third data set I should mention as well. You know, I mean, it's also quant, but, you know, you have quant research that you're doing, like primary research, and then you also have performance metrics, you know, that you're looking at in the market. And I think all three of those go together. You know, I think that if you don't know your questions, you're going to need to rely on qualitative research a lot more until you're able to better articulate them. So some of it, I think, also comes down to, you know, where you're at and what your questions are. And some of it comes down to what the nature of your brand is and how feely, you know, versus kind of like rational, how emotional versus rational it is. I don't think there's one factor that guides it, but certainly I think however it is you define it, you should have all three elements within your diet. You know, you should have some really good qual research, you should have some good primary quant research, and you should have some good performance, you know, data analytics. All three of those really belong together to triangulate and give you a comprehensive 360 view on what's really going on.
A balanced diet makes a healthy marketer. There we go. Well, as we start to wrap things up here, talking about all of these different emotions and experiences in response to brands as revealed in qualitative data, it is time for me to ask you for a brand that has made you smile recently, Dwayne.
Yeah, you know, I love M&M's. I love the M&M's characters. Anytime I see the M&M's characters, I get an instant smile on my face before I even know what's happening in the ad. We've done work for Mars, of course, and so I'm biased, I guess, in the sense that, you know, I've had a deeper engagement with them. But yeah, anytime I see those M&M characters, I instantly get a smile on my face.
Well, that is awesome. If not somewhat hunger inducing, now I have to go find some M&M's. Dwayne, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, for Heart Connect, which is our qualitative research platform, you know, that's available to everybody to use. You know, it's a software that's available in the market. You can go to heartconnect.com. So that's the website. For media science, you can go to mediascience.com. So those are both great resources, I think, in terms of finding out more about what we do.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes, which folks can find at onbrandpodcast.com. Dwayne, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick. It was a great conversation.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember you can listen for free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.